Good morning, everybody. If you did not get a handout that's entitled Psalm 92, you can hold your hand up now and somebody will bring you one. At the end of the sermon today, we will extend an opportunity for meeting spiritual needs. If you want to be baptized or meet some other spiritual need, you can come to the front at that time and we'll help you. I'll be concluding the sermon today with a note about Thanksgiving, but the invitation of Jesus always exists and you can use it at that time. So speaking of Thanksgiving, today is the beginning of what we call Thanksgiving week. In our country, we have a holiday known as Thanksgiving. Kids are out of school, government offices will be closed, at least on Thursday. Businesses will close to give employees time off. People travel, families get together for Thanksgiving. It's not an observance that's commanded in the Bible, but it certainly corresponds and coincides with what we find in the Bible, because thanks is frequently expressed and even commanded. One book of the Bible that contains an obvious emphasis on Thanksgiving is the Old Testament book of Psalms. It's a collection of 150 songs or psalms. And in that collection, six of the psalms are community thanksgivings. That is, thanksgiving expressed by a group or a community. And 13 of the psalms are individual thanksgivings. So it seems to me to be appropriate, maybe even necessary, that today, at the beginning of the week of Thanksgiving, especially in these tumultuous times in which we live, that we consider at least one of these psalms. I read them all and pondered which one, and I selected Psalm 92. And I have been thrilled to study it and prepare this sermon, and I hope you enjoy it. Psalm 92, listen to it. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night, to the music of the lute and the harp, to the melody of the lyre. For you, O Lord, have made me glad by your work. At the works of your hand I sing for joy. How great are your works, O Lord! Your thoughts are very deep. The stupid man cannot know, the fool cannot understand this, that though the wicked sprout like grass and all evildoers flourish, they are doomed to destruction forever. But you, O Lord, are on high forever. For behold your enemies, O Lord, for behold your enemies shall perish, all evildoers shall be scattered. But you have exalted my horn like that of a wild ox. You have poured over me fresh oil. My eyes have seen the downfall of my enemies. My ears have heard the doom of my evil assailants. The righteous flourish like a palm tree and grow like a cedar in Lebanon. They're planted in the house of the Lord and flourish in the courts of our God. They shall bear fruit in old age and they are ever full of sap and green to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock. And there is no unrighteousness in him. Do you see the loud note that pervades in this psalm is one of joyous thanksgiving? Notice the joy included in giving of thanks. In verse 1, he says, it's good to give thanks, to sing praises to his name. In verse 4, you have made me glad by your work. And at your works, I sing for joy. So it is joyous thanksgiving. But it's important to see the setting in which this joyous thanksgiving is expressed. The thanks and praise and joy are not set in paradise. They're not set in perfection. No, they occur in the real world, a world that contains people and everything that that means when you have people. Some people in the world, according to verse 7, are evildoers. According to verse 9, some are enemies. According to verse 6, some are stupid or senseless, and some are fools. The psalmist knows about this world, but he believes these opponents, these evildoers, will not last or prevail. He notes that the senseless cannot know and the foolish cannot understand. The wicked and evildoers may have their time, but verse 7 declares they are doomed to destruction. Likewise, according to verse 9, enemies may oppose, but they will perish and be scattered. So we have this world created and ordered by God. But unfortunately, it's tainted by stupidity and ignorance. It's attacked by enemies and opposed by evildoers. But here's what the psalmist declares. Verse 11, my eyes have seen the downfall of enemies. My ears have heard of the doom of my evil assailants. Enemies and evil and evildoers will push and pull. Foolish people may blather. Assailants may attack. Yes, that's the reality of this world where we live. Everybody's not on the Lord's side. Disease and death may take their toll. Sin and unrighteousness may at moments prevail. That's the reality of this world. But right smack in the middle of all that, listen to the psalmist. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to his name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love and your faithfulness, and to declare that the Lord is upright. What I want us to see is that despite the opposition of enemies, and despite the chaos that's caused by evildoers, the psalmist declares that God is loving and God is reliable. He's faithful, as you talked about in the Bible class this morning. Because of God, in the world of evil, the psalmist says in verse 10, I'm exalted and I'm honored. And he is joyously thankful for that, joyously thankful. You know, I've thought a lot through the years about Romans 1, and I'm impressed with what Paul says in several ways, but in verse 18 of Romans 1, he says that the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness. So, he explains God's wrath is revealed, and there's no getting around it. He says in that passage there's no excuse. Because God has made himself known. He has revealed who he is and what he is so that people are without excuse. So notice verse 18, beginning at verse 18 of Romans 1. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God. Now watch. Or give thanks. Or give thanks. They became futile in their speculations and their foolish hearts were darkened. So that's Paul's indictment. They did not honor him as God or give thanks. There's something significant about being ungrateful. People are quick to doubt God when difficulties develop. They're quick to question God when they can't figure things out. And when his goodness can be questioned. Or they critique God about what he does. So doubts and critiques and complaints. But people are slow to thank him. And the apostle says that that grows out of a futile mind and a dark heart. Our psalmist in Psalm 92 is much wiser than that. In this world that's tainted by evil and evildoers, he knows and says in so many words, it is good to give thanks to the Lord. To sing praises to your name, O Most High. Joyous thanksgiving. So I want to pursue that a little more and help us to see that the joyous thanksgiving that is expressed is thanksgiving about an ordered world, God's ordered world. And this is really intriguing to me, and I hope it will be to you, that both in words and in form or shape. The psalmist conveys something about the order of God's world. You know, at times the world seems random, chaotic, confused. But let's think again. I think the psalmist likely used some literary features to convey this ordered world idea, or at least to support it. So let me show you some of the literary features I think you'll find fascinating. To begin with, he uses an inclusion to frame the psalm and to hold it together. Notice verse 2. To declare, he says, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night. Now notice verse 15. To declare that the Lord is upright and he is my rock. There is no unrighteousness in him. So at the beginning and the end, he frames the poem with the same word, the declaration. Then the psalm appears to have an organizational structure that I've tried to depict for us here. We have 15 lines that are arranged like this. 15 lines that make up verses 1 through 7. And they appear this way. There are 6 couplets. Those are 2-line phrases. And 1 triplet. So that makes 15. And they precede the center statement in which he says, "But you, O Lord, are on high forever." And then that's followed by 15 more lines that's made up of a triplet and 6 couplets that are in reverse order. So if you look at the diagram that I have here on the next slide, there are 6 couplets and a triplet. Then the center line, and there's a triplet and 6 couplets. So that's quite fascinating if that is the arrangement that the psalmist gave it. But it gets even more intriguing than that. In the first 7 verses in those 15 lines, there are 52 Hebrew words. In the last part, the triplet and the couplets, there are 52 Hebrew words. I doubt that was just coincidence. That's something that the artistry of the psalmist employed to make his point. You might also be interested to know that the word Yahweh, that's translated Lord in our English translations, is found 7 times in this psalm. 3 times in the first 15 lines, once at the center, and 3 times in the following 15 lines. So what do you make of this? What do you make of the balance and the symmetry of the psalm? Well, it reminds us that the world is not random. The world is not chaotic. When God created, he created in a logical, powerful, wise way. You know, the opening scene of the Bible in Genesis chapter 1, the Spirit of God moves on the face of the water, and God speaks. He says, "Let there be light," and there's light. And all the things that follow in a logical, orderly way. God knows what he's doing. And this world may seem random and chaotic, but no, God is in control. And still today, the writer of Hebrews reminds us about Jesus in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, that Jesus is the exact representation of God. He is the imprint of his nature, and he upholds all things by the word of his power. God is still in control. So today, our world is somewhat chaotic, but God knows what he's doing. He's still on his throne. Paul looked at the trouble and turmoil of his day, and he called it the present distress. We could maybe call our world that today. Trouble and turmoil, confusion, chaos, disturbance, and violence. And we're apt to become agitated and angry and afraid. But look at Psalm 92. Look at its words and look at its form. And you can thank God and sing his praises because God knows what he's doing. I want you to look at verse 2 and see that his praise is constant. He says to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night. All day long, constantly, he's praising God. Then I would just observe with you that his praises are full. In verse 1, he says to sing praises to your name. That would be vocal music. And then in verse 3, instrumental music, to the music of the lute, and harp and lyre. So his praise is full. And as we've noted, his praise is joyous. God is in control of this world. We have an ordered universe. Praise God for that. It is good to give thanks to the Lord our God. Then, as we round out our study this morning, I want you to notice that not only is there thanksgiving for the ordered world, but there's thanksgiving for God's care and keeping. So what the psalmist does is he uses two comparisons that we know as metaphors. And, you know, when you were in high school English class, somebody almost inevitably asked the teacher when she talked about similes and metaphors, why do we have to learn this? Well, the answer is that it helps you understand the Bible. So we have these comparisons. They're striking comparisons that he uses, and they both have to do with plants. So let's look at the comparison that relates to the wicked in verse 7. The wicked sprout like grass, and evildoers flourish. So you sow the seed of grass, and it sprouts rather quickly. The tender blades are lush and green. They make a verdant field. You know, the shepherd of Psalm 23, the shepherd who leads the sheep to green pastures. And following the sprouting of the seed, there's flourishing. The comparison is the wicked sprout like grass, and they flourish. So the grass grows and makes this wonderful field. But soon the sun starts blazing, and the ground is dry. The grass begins to suffer, and then it withers in the heat of summer. That's what he says happens. The wicked sprouts like grass in verse 7, all evil do is flourish. They are doomed to destruction forever. Verse 9, your enemies shall perish, and evildoers shall be scattered. Oh, evil has its day. Evil has its day, but it won't last. It will suffer from its own weight. I think about Romans 1 again. God allowed sin to take its toll, you know. People were without excuse. God made himself known. People didn't honor or give thanks. And what happened? God gave them over. Verses 24, 26, and 28 in Romans 1. He gives them over to their sin. He allows sin to take its toll. He gives evildoers up to their own evil. Don't forget that. But the psalmist is not through with this plant metaphor. So take a look at verse number 12. He moves from grass to trees, and from the wicked to the righteous. He says, the righteous flourish like a palm tree and grow like a cedar in Lebanon. So these are trees that are impressive and useful. And not only is the kind of tree that's considered, but also where it grows. Look at the next verse. They are planted in the house of the Lord, and they flourish in the courts of the Lord. So where a tree is located matters. You know, Psalm 1 says a tree planted by the water. If you're a tree, that's where you want to grow, by the water. Well, these trees are pictured as being in the house of the Lord, in the courts of God. I think the point that's being made is their proximity to the Lord, their closeness to the Lord. And because of their closeness to the Lord, they live a long time and they bear a lot of fruit. Look at verse 14. They still bear fruit in old age, and they are ever full of sap and green. It reminds us that our proximity to the Lord is important. If we want to spiritually flourish, we have to stay close to God. We have to be near Him. And so if we want to grow old and still be productive and bear fruit, be full of sap and green, let's stay close to God. Get close to Him and stay close to Him and never leave. So, this is a good time to consider God in this poem. The portrait of God that emerges. I mentioned to you that He is the Lord. He is Yahweh. That's mentioned seven times. About Him, the psalmist says, His steadfast love and His faithfulness. And he says in verse 5, His works are great. Great are Your works, O Lord. Your thoughts are deep. These are likely allusions to God's creative work. God who does the work of creation. Notice verse 2, God is most high. Verse 8, He is on high forever. Doesn't mean there are lesser gods who are below Him, but that He is high and He is the highest. It's similar to a thought in Psalm 83, verse 13, in which the psalmist said, You alone are the most high over all the earth. So we have the Lord, we have the one who's most high, and then look at verse 15, He is upright and He is my rock. He's solid and steady. So what do we have in the world? We have ignorance and opposition and violence and evil doing. All of those realities. Sometimes they look like they have the upper hand. The wicked may sprout like grass and evildoers may flourish. But they are doomed to destruction. Enemies shall perish. Evildoers will be scattered. But God is the one who's right. And there is no unrighteousness in Him. So, in the middle of opposition and chaos, like we live in this world, the psalmist said, I'm exalted and I'm honored. Verse 10. The Most High lifts him up and he flourishes and is productive. Here's a person who knows God. He thanks God. He is with God. He sings joyous praises to the Most High. He believes that God's works are great and the thoughts of God are deep. Things may not look right. And that's not unusual in our world today. But God is right. So let's take these thoughts in this psalm, this wonderful psalm of thanksgiving, and make them our convictions in this Thanksgiving of 2020. It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to His high and holy name. So I want you to take a look at the center of the psalm one more time, and let's move toward the center. Let's begin at verse 7. As we do that, we learn that the wicked sprout like grass. All evildoers flourish. But they are doomed to destruction forever. But at the center is the Lord, and He is on high forever. We must put Him at the highest place in our hearts, in our lives, in our minds. He is right, and we must make Him our rock. We must stand on Him because He's steady and stable. Yes, yes, today and this week and every week. Can we join with a psalmist who said, It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to sing praises to His name, to sing praises to the Most High.